What's one thing you learned from your daughter?
One thing, I think it's her creativity and imagination. I see so much of that in her, and I think that's the thing that I love most, is watching just her day by day grow artistically. But to watch someone like pick up a pencil and want to draw, or, you know, being interested in music, or, you know, she tells me, I don't know where this came from, but I'm like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And she's 5 years old, but she's like, I want to be a director. I'm like, what? Wow, where'd you hear that? And I was like, direct what? And she's like, dinosaur movies. I'm like, yeah, good luck, you know? You know, those are expensive, honey. Like, I would get to that. No, but it's cool. It's really cool to watch someone's, like, artistic engine, like, start growing or whatever, so.
Heck yeah.
Oh, I can't even think of that. It's like watching the first ounces of creativity from your kid.
Yeah, man.
That must be so nice.
I can't wait. Man. I'm so psyched for that. Damn. If God puts that in the cards for me, man. I can't wait, dude.
Wow. Welcome back. Welcome home, man.
Hey, we're back.
Episode 264. You Are Here podcast. You're back.
Get it right.
We love you guys.
Yes.
I'm here. We're all here. And I'm so ready for this episode. We got Adam Paul Stone on the podcast. Director, writer, doing it all, man.
Father, husband.
It's going to be an amazing episode. It's going to be so sick, man.
I mean, you feel it.
How do you know
Adam? Do you feel the tingle?
I do feel tingle.
Yeah, me too.
And I don't even know Adam.
Yeah. No,
you know
no.
What I mean?
Well, you're about to know him.
And we're all about
that. If there's one thing we're good at, dude, it's getting to know people, man.
That's true, man.
It's opening up. Adam Paul Stone, dude, thank you for joining us today. Again, thank you. I can't say it enough. I'm psyched to have you for the next hour minimum. You're locked in.
Yeah.
If you're listening to the podcast, thank you. Thank you for the Patreon subscribers. Thank you so
Shout
much.
Shout out to the patrons.
Shout out to you guys. We see you. We're growing. We got angles. Not today, but we have them.
Yeah.
We're growing. We're growing. Adam, so you were saying before you met Adam Lauder and, you know, this other guy, right? And then you found us through him, right? So he was the stepping stone to us, right?
Right. Yep.
See? And now you're here. You are here.
And that's what we do. We steal. We take people. No, I'm kidding. We love Adam.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah, I found Adam through TikTok. Scrolling, really? And he would always pop up on my feed, and I was like, I'm gonna cast that guy in a movie one day. Mm-hmm. And didn't even know he was in Texas. I just remember thinking that. Mm-hmm. And one day I saw him on a live, like a TikTok live, and I hit him up with a message. I think I had, like, you know, crawled into his comments before that, like, hey, I'd love to cast you. And he just liked it, and I was like, rude, like, you know. So
sounds like him
on that live. I was yeah, exactly. On that live, I was like, hey, I'm in Texas. And I think he was talking about directing on that thing. And I was like, oh, he directs. And I was like, hey, I'm about to direct my first feature in Texas. I would love to talk. And I saw his eyebrows go up, and he was like, hit me up. Yeah, I think he said his email was in the description or whatever. So I did. And we ended up having a video chat, and it went really great, and met up with him for coffee. And that was around the time, I think I had a trip planned. So during that trip, I YouTubed him and watched four episodes of y'all's show, with him and his wife and him by himself. He had been on several times. So I was able to, you know, he's always looking for publicity. So I was able
always,
to dig through all his
books. Always, man. If the lights are on, Adam's in front of him.
He's going to love that.
Yeah. Adam, we love you. Man.
But I was able to catch up on him and see what kind of person he was before anything else. And then I casted him in a music video that we did over the summer.
That was great too.
That time, thank you. I ended up reaching out and hey, would you want to produce my first feature? And then that's how me and Dave ended up getting connected after that.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Holy cow. So, dude.
I didn't know that's how it started.
That's how it started.
From TikTok.
That's how it started. Our relationship was built through TikTok.
That's a great, I think, lesson. It's just if you just ask.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, truly.
Like just putting yourself out there. I feel like this is a lot of things I've realized, especially with people first starting with getting into anything creative, especially. I think it's so important just to ask. You know what I mean? Even if you are expecting zero, you know?
Yeah, bro.
Because that's what the bar seems like, you know?
Yeah.
But it's kind of... It gets some faith in the world of how much people are willing to give,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah,
and that's true
right.
forever,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I agree, you bro. Know? Well said,
that's beautiful.
Mike. Yeah, brother.
Yeah, I think that year was a year for me of just, you know, stepping out of my comfort zone in a lot of areas. And one of that was reaching out to Adam. Was I wouldn't typically do it like that, but I was pretty aggressive in my approach to wanting to get this movie made so bad that I was reaching out, trying to open every door. And he's just a nice person, and he was willing to talk to me, and luckily we hit it off and stuff. But yeah, I was pretty aggressive at that time and trying to get the movie made. And honestly, like, without meeting him and Dave too, like, I don't think I would be the artist I am right now, which is so weird to say because our friendship is so small and so short. Mm-hmm. But truly, their approach to creatives and helping people create has got me to a place where I feel like I'm growing as an artist, which I feel like for a long time I was kind of, you know, stalled out a little bit and kind of didn't want to learn. I'm dyslexic, so writing was always really challenging, and I kept it kind of close to the vest. Like, I wouldn't let people read scripts until I felt comfortable and stuff. So meeting Adam and Dave, I was able to kind of ask, like, for help, and which I hadn't done in this writing side of things, and really helped me grow as an artist meeting them. So who would have thought, like, through TikTok, this thing, if I wouldn't have done all that, I wouldn't even be in this place of growing right now, which has just been so fulfilling and rewarding over the past couple months. So
yeah, man,
crazy.
That's amazing, dude.
The world's shaped by TikTok.
Yeah,
hey, we can make like a commercial, what do you think?
I know, we're kind of pitching TikTok in a major way, but like, and we're making fun of Adam, but Adam, you know, without that dude, that man,
I wouldn't,
like,
be here.
Opening himself up and like giving his gifts away and doing it for nothing. Like, it's a testament to that guy.
Yeah.
That guy is such a good friend, and he's such a
hardworking too.
He's so hardworking. He's trying to. He genuinely believes in what he does. It's worked for him, and therefore he's like, I want to have other people feel empowered, like I feel empowered. He did that for me in a major way, and he's doing that for people all over the world now. So it's just like, and now we have a friendship and a working relationship that because of the strength of him. So like, again, bro, I make jokes about him all the time because I love him. I love that dude. That's my brother, man. That's like one of my to the grave. I got Adam. He's my boy. He's a beautiful man. He's really, honestly, like, I can't say nothing better about Adam. But yeah, off of his back, we met, dude. And every time I feel like I talk to you, I'm like buzzing, Adam. I feel like we always have like some kind of breakthrough on story or like life where I'm like, this, I don't know why, but I feel like I know this dude much longer than I have. Mm. You know, like in real world time.
Yeah.
I don't know. And yeah, bro. What you guys have the Texas, you know, thing going, right? Mm. And like what I've seen is like Texans ride for Texans, dude. Like you guys got each other's back. There's a pride in Texas, man. You guys got each other. And like I kind of feel like Jersey and Texas mesh well, man.
I think so.
I'm telling you, bro.
I can see that.
Why not?
From what I've seen, I get it. When I go to Texas, every time I've been, I'm like, dude, I get this.
Mm.
I rock with this majorly.
Yeah.
But there's some places like a Jersey person wouldn't probably vibe with like
LA,
a
LA dude.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it'd be a different story. So I feel like, you know, Jersey rides with Texas and Texas rides with Jersey too. That's a little
I like that
belief I have, you know, what I've seen.
Yeah, that's true.
What do you think are like the correlations there?
I don't know. Like hardworking, like you know, nothing given, but nothing taken either. It's kind of like a chip on your shoulder, believing in the good in others. Like there's a pride for sure. I don't know if pride's the right word, but like a value in like doing good for your own. You know. Mm. So I think. Maybe it's there. Maybe there's crossover there. I don't know, but that's what I've noticed. That's what I've noticed.
Horseback riding, a lot of horseback riding there in Jersey, and
that's true. Actually,
yeah, there is.
Everywhere I live, there was horses.
There's equestrian centers all over
there.
Yeah, man. It's the Garden State. You know what I mean?
I think there's something to this. We're gonna talk about this for a long time, but I think it's Jersey Italians. can, there's a vibe with like a Texan value.
If you're watching on YouTube, Adam just lightened up his face, just so you guys know that.
Oh, sorry.
No. Just so you know that. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I saw that and like you should check it out on YouTube because he's lighting himself in the moment.
I also love, I see your zebra on your camera.
Oh, look at this.
Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry.
No, I have to call it out. No, but now he's going to be working. That's so funny.
Okay. Continue. I'm sorry. I think there's
something between like the jersey, because you know, I feel like jersey is like, it's not like door to door neighbor, but hey, what's up, neighbor? Right. I feel like Texas is like that.
Texas is door open kind of, you know, kind of vibes for sure.
I don't think jersey is like that, but I think like Italian jerseys are like door open, you know,
yes,
that kind of thing. Definitely. So maybe there's something there, man.
What does Texas mean to you, Adam Paul Stone? Yeah, you seem to be, hey, dude, can I make a statement about you?
Uh-oh.
And it may be wrong, it may be right.
Go ahead.
You seem to be telling stories about Texas, dude. You know, like you didn't up and move your whole family. You didn't up and move your family to LA, dude. You didn't take this show on the road and like be like, oh, I got to go to a hub where there's like stories popping everywhere.
I tried.
Really? So tell me about
2014, I left my hometown, never really had flown on a plane before, and moved to New York to try.
What?
And it was pretty quick. I didn't even have any friends there either. It was pretty quick. I found out that, I'm not from this place or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it was pretty quick that I realized that. And so I was only there like almost like less than a year.
Right.
I was in New York and I bounced. But I think it honed in on what I, you know, what I am. And I think it was crucial for that thing. I was like, oh, but it wasn't until pretty recently that I'm like, oh, I want to make movies and create my art here in this state. And I think I think there's enough people making movies in LA and New York and telling stories about those things. And when they do movies in Texas, it's actually shot in New Mexico. I'm like, whoa, whoa. Why aren't we doing them here in this state?
Yes.
Like, so that's kind of been my mission for the past couple of years is, I don't really have a plan for the mission. I'm just stating it out loud. It's my mission to make movies here and whatever it takes to do that. Like, I know there's a lot of pushback from, well, the incentives are not great. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm not looking for $1 million to make these movies. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It is definitely something my heart is about. Telling stories about people here in this state. So,
right.
And so is Adam Lauder, which is cool to find somebody with kinship in that area who wants to, you know, tell stories about the state and people from the state.
Right.
So it's been really cool.
Right on, dude. And I'm going to just throw you on your heels a little bit because I, you know, I'm a pot stirrer, man. In my core, sometimes I like to get people going.
He does.
You know, I like to just, you know, at the dinner table, like throw a little like, oh,
he boxes.
Who are you voting for, Grandma? You know, like just something like that. So do you believe, hey, Adam, do you believe like the family drama film is dead?
Absolutely. Yes. And no. No. I think what is what's dead is the idea that people think that doesn't work, I guess. Like people just don't think those work. And the people, I mean, like, producers or investors. And what I'm think is like, no one really knows. I think this whole like idea of things aren't working, I'm like, what are we doing to investigate that? Like, what kind of money are you putting into family dramas or even dramas in general to even investigate this claim that you're making about this isn't working? What's not working? You're not even putting money into it. Like, you're dropping money into horror films and thrillers and action movies, and you're not even investigating if family dramas work. Of course they work. I think anything that comes from an artist's point of view, I think usually works. I think when it's something done with a bunch of fingers in the pie or, you know, a lot of people, like a film done by committee, I think that's when it gets muddy and people don't connect and then they don't work. I think, of course, family dramas work. I, you know, that's my perspective. But yeah. What do you think, Dave? Do you think they're viable? Do you think they work?
I think so, man. I would like to say that. I would like to believe that. Mm. But again, Adam, I don't know. You know, I don't see them anywhere, dude, enough to even think that they work or not.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
That's true.
I don't see them anywhere. Yeah. I don't see them.
Is Marriage Story a family
drama? Yes, one a year gets put out. And maybe you know, it's just not a there is Kung Fu Panda 7. That's coming out. Right. You know, yeah. There's those films are coming out, and then there's the thrillers. And
hey,
the
Kung Fu Panda's good.
Of course it is, man. I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying there's no room. It's like everyone just ceased to try to like tell a story.
Yeah.
A drama, just a straight up, no frills, no. Let's bring the element of like, you know, there's a hand that's, you know, that's cursed. You don't need it.
Yeah.
It's stories about humanity enough. Yeah, you know what I mean? I didn't want to knock it, but I didn't even see it.
Yeah.
But
dude, I've been thinking about this recently too.
Yeah.
You know what I've kind of been coming to the conclusion of, like, I think the average person that comes home and like puts on Netflix, like, doesn't think that far, you know? But this is like,
I'm getting mad. You're making me mad. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Be mad because it kind of sucks. But that's not like that could exist.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean there's people that, you know, don't have a deeper thought about, you know, film and creative, like things like that.
Right.
But there's like, it doesn't matter if that person exists. That's why, like, I feel like the industry takes advantage of, like, there are people like that. So this is like, we got to get them the easy, quick, digestible thing, you know, because that's what sells.
What did Adam say? Our buddy Adam.
Adam Simon.
Writer. Yeah, Simon. Yeah. What did he say? He's like, oh, it's going to be like fast food. It's going to be like, you know, you just this, and this, and you put it in AI, and now you got
And I think with Marriage Story, like that's, you said that's one. I think there, if a movie is good, if a movie's good enough, it makes it.
Yeah,
you know,
I that's what I believe. Yeah. I believe it's if you somehow,
but it sucks because you have to, if you're making something that's not that, you gotta, it's almost like you gotta be 10 times more lucky.
10 times more lucky. No one wants to invest in you, right, Adam? I mean, I know that's something too that it, you know, you've dealt with pre-production of trying to tell a story about. Let's just say a drama. Let's just say that's the genre. It's about a person, a protagonist who is struggling with a real thing that goes on in a lot of people's heads day to day. There is no crazy frills, you know, and wild storylines on the side of it. There's no song and dance going on or smoke and mirrors. And you go approach somebody with that, and sometimes the response you'll get is like, that's not enough. It's not going to go anywhere. And it's like, how do you know? How do you know? What if we really invest in like the story? When did writing become like, it's not about that anymore? You know, navigating a film is hard enough, but without a script, it's not, it sucks. You could put whatever amount of money you want into it, it's gonna suck. You know that, I bet. But I don't know, I guess I'm what I'm trying to say is I don't see it anywhere, like you were saying, Adam, and it's not enough, and I don't understand why. I see what you're saying too, about like the come home. You don't want to, a lot of people are not putting that much thought into like, you know what, honey, let me like, I really want to cry tonight. Like, I really want to like feel something crazy about my father or something. So like, let's put on this new drama that came out from these like Texas filmmakers. Like, I get it. I get it. And I get why the market's smaller on the, and it's in the coasts. It's like LA and New York. And like, you go to the Angelica and that's where you could see that movie for like a limited release. Straight to on demand. Like, I get it. But could it be possible that like we just haven't tried the other way in a while? And like, maybe people want to see more of that stuff than we know. Maybe like we give them the opportunity to go. Like, I remember going to see like Forrest Gump with like a bunch of friends, and it was awesome. I know it was like a major movie, but it's like, you know, there's some frills and stuff, but it's like a story about like a guy. Like, it's just, it wasn't crazy. You know, or like they're just films from the 90s, the 80s, the 70s, even like, you just, it's very different type of storytelling than we see nowadays. Story has shifted. So anyway, Adam, that's Paul Stone, true, I don't want to eat up all your time today talking in loops about how mad I am about the state of things.
I mean, we could go on forever about that.
I know,
you
bro.
Know what I mean?
I know, dude. I want to get into like, cause I don't even know this. Like, what, I genuinely want to know why story? Like, what story came to your life? Was it like a moment of like being a kid and someone like read you a story or something? And you were like, dude, I need to do this.
Good question about the story portion. I know where movies came into play for me. It was, I think I was in eighth grade, and we went to Blockbuster, one of those kind of rental stores, and rented Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind, thinking it was a Jim Carrey comedy. I was like, oh, this is going to be hilarious. And so I'm like 13, and I put it on, and it was not funny, like in that way, and probably not appropriate for a 13-year-old to watch. But I remember after it ended, I was, because I've always been a very emotional person. So after it ended, I thought they made that movie for me, and I restarted it instantly and rewatched it again.
Wow.
And it was the beginning of like, oh, some, and I didn't even know what that, what even any of this meant. Like, oh, I want to be a filmmaker. I didn't even have that even in my brain at this point. It was just that moved me, and that was cool. And it wasn't until, gosh, what a crazy contrast. I'm at my grandmother's house, and I rented Rush Hour 2. And the DVD extras had the director, Brett Ratner, directing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, those connected, like Eternal Sunshine. And then, oh, that's what I want to be. And it wasn't until I saw like him directing Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker that I was like, oh, okay, that's what it is. Whatever that is, that's what I want.
Yeah.
I want to be a storyteller. And the writing thing came like a year later. I started trying to figure out how to write a screenplay. And I was like around 17, I think, at that point.
Okay.
And yeah, that's how it all started. Rush Hour 2 and Eternal Sunshine of Spotless Mind.
Can you remember the first story that like moved you?
You know, no, I can't remember if it was what it could have been, but the thing that sticks out is the Eternal Sunshine thing. It was like this, I just remember being in my bunk bed, and we had like two TVs for some reason in our room, one that was like higher up for the bunk bed guy, me,
wow.
And I remember putting on Eternal Sunshine and watching it, and my brothers were like watching a James Bond movie or something, and I was just watching this movie and like just being so moved by it, and like for years, still to this day, I listen to the soundtrack for that movie to write.
Wow.
Like, it's like what helps me. And, you know, I think back in the day, maybe it still does this. iTunes used to track how much you listen to a song.
Yeah.
And one of the songs on that movie, it said like 20,000 plays because I had looped it while writing a screenplay. 20,000 awesome, plays.
I do the thing, bro.
Yeah.
I do the same thing. But it's interesting. Really? Yeah, I do. I listen to music when I'm breaking down a script, if I'm doing acting work, if I'm writing, I always kind of, if I'm alone, I'm throwing music on. I mean, that's definite. But that's interesting at like the point of inception of like a story moving you, that's still what you go back to like reignite that artistic flame, you know? It like has that kind of staying power still.
It's kind of crazy how it does that. It does. And I noticed on this last piece of thing I was writing that you've read, I noticed like halfway through I wasn't listening to music, and I was like, whoa, why haven't I been listening to music through this? Because that used to be my go-to, was listen to music and write. And I noticed halfway through the screenwriting I was really struggling with this script, and then I turned on music, and it was like all the clogs in my brain had like like they had clogs in my head or something, and it just like released. I was like, oh, I was missing this other component that I need, which is music. I'm a musician as well.
Oh,
so like having this other element helps me with this other part of my career. You know what I mean? Like they're both hand in hand. Like I need one to help the other. And it was so helpful. Like when I started flipping on music, I was like, oh my gosh, why wasn't I doing this? But yeah.
Yeah, it is super helpful, man. They go together. They do go together.
They do.
Film and music, dude. Story and music.
I cannot write, though, with words. Like, it has to be, like, instrumental
100%
stuff.
100% same. Same. I can't hear, it's like possible. Yeah. Words. I can't hear singing. I need to just hear sound.
Mm.
Yeah.
I know. I think your brain just can't do, like,
yeah. Two things at once.
But singing. Yeah.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah, that's so funny.
So, wow.
I wanted to ask.
Eternal.
This is one thing I wanted to ask before, you know, we got on here, and then you brought it up, is you talked about that you kind of had like kind of like a limbo stage after like at a point in your career. And like, How did you get, like, what happened there? Because I feel like for me, I had that too. And it always became something where, like, I've been doing the same thing over and over, or I, like, lost track of, like, what I actually want to make, or I don't know. Like, what you said you got out of that. Like, what changed, you know? Like, what got you out of that?
Well, what got me out of it was asking for help. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of times we can be really prideful, and whether the pride comes from fear and stuff, like it stems, like a lot of mine was fearful. I didn't want people to see that was a fraud, or I didn't know what I was doing. You know, all those like things that are just stupid. Who cares? None of us know what we're doing. We're just all like guessing anyway. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, but I just remember having like, anytime someone, I don't know, it was just, I had all that built up inside of me, this thing. And so once I was able to let go of that, I was able to start the process of learning, growing, and being educated, which I just never, because with my group of friends, I had always been the guy that they turned to ask questions for. I can't be the guy who turns, you know what I mean? This is stupid stuff that we built, that I built up in my brain of like, I showed people how to write scripts. I can't be asking how to write, you know what I mean? But once I let that go, and it was on this drive back from Austin, I called Adam and was like, just kind of broke down, was like, I need help. And he was like, I'm so excited you said that. It's like something you wanted to say or something. Wow. Like, I'm so happy you brought that up. Mm. And it was just began the process, and it was challenging. We had these like three extensive get-togethers that were like around 3 hours long, and it was hard to do. My brain was having hard wrapping around it, because I, for the longest time, was a structure guy, very good at structuring a script. And he was like, I'm not teaching that. That's not, he's like, I'm talking about the element of story and how to do that. And I'm like, what is this? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, what? A premise and just all these things that were foreign. And I was like, I think the first like meeting, I was sort of rejecting a lot of it and was like, what is this? And then slowly through the times that we'd meet up, I was like, yes, you know, just wanting to eat it all up. And can we meet a fourth time? You know, like whatever, you know, just bugging him so much or whatever. But like, it helped me. It really did. It was like this awakening, a true awakening. And it helped me find that voice that people, I think, had always been asking. I think I had a voice, but it was like, I remember sending my movies out to people like, this is great, I don't see you in it though. Huh? Wow. What do you mean? You know, like that would happen a lot. Damn. And I just never could identify that. I think my most recent movie right here, people had saw a lot more of me in it, but I think previous to that, people were just like, I just don't see the voice. And I think without meeting like Adam, I don't think I would have been able to like find that. And that's so crazy. It's like, but yeah, it was tough. It was tough for someone who's dyslexic to open up that. Cause I'm the type of guy, if it was like, who wants to read the passage in the book in class? Yeah. I was like, trying to hide, like, can I use the bathroom? You know what I mean? Like, cannot read out loud type same, person. Dude, same. So, wow, it's crazy.
I suffer from the same thing, bro. Where like the words would get switched up. Yeah. Growing up, I never quite understood why, but I was always a slow reader. And same with the, you know, get called on and we're doing like Shakespeare in class, like in English class. And like, I was just like, dude, please not me. Please not me. And for years, I would like not, I like refused to read because I was like, oh, I'm just a shitty reader. Hmm. Or I can't, you know, I'm just not good enough at whatever. But I think, what you hit on just now, bro, it just spurred in me like that. Well, first of all, it was a gift. Someone gave me a gift in the school me and Adam went to. Shout out Marina. She came to class and she was like, because I aired out this issue I had. And I was like, I had this insecurity. We're talking about insecurities. And like one of my major insecurities is reading. And because I just don't think I see the words clearly like other people see them. Not vision wise, like I can't view them, but they just get jumbled. And the next day or next 2 days, the next time I saw her, she brought in these three or four wrapped up books in gift wrap, like in wrapping paper. And I opened it up and it was like poetry books and like two of her other favorite books. She's like, you know, I got these for you because, you know, you're going to read. Like, you're going to just, you know, this is for you because I believe in you. Mm. And it was just like, just someone to say, like, you know, to first say out loud, hey, you know, I think the most powerful thing, one of the most powerful things you can say is, I need help. I'm uncomfortable with this. I don't feel good doing this, and I don't feel strong here, and I don't know, and I need help. That is like a powerful thing to say, bro. And how many people aren't saying it at this very moment when all they need is someone else to come in and just say, you got this. Like, let's do it. Let's try it this way. You know, you have to humble yourself to be there. You have to say, like, I don't know best. And I just think you can always learn something from someone. Like, you can always grasp something else that you didn't get from someone. And if you don't, it's a pride issue. It's a, I know better. I don't need your help. And I need a lesson in that sometimes, you know, I need a lesson in that too. So, yeah, man, I think, what you said just like spurred that in me. Like, I don't know, that call, that phone call, that drive from Austin. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I need help. And the fruit of that, you're already experiencing. Like, it's awesome, dude.
Yeah.
It's a testament to like, reaching out to your fellow man and just being like, I think I could use some help. I don't know what I'm doing.
I really relate to this, dude. I think like surrendering the pride is so hard sometimes.
Yeah.
I think growing up, it was always like, I had to know what was going on, or like what to do, or like how to do something. And I was always like chasing, like, if I didn't know, I'm like a failure, you know? Right. And shout out to my boy, Eric, dude. He, I always talked about this with him is like, he's the first person that comes to mind. He always, like, if he doesn't know anything, he's like, oh, I don't know how to do any of that. So like, and like, he said, like, I don't care if I look like an idiot or people think I'm an idiot. It's like, I'm going to learn way more than everyone else at this point.
Yeah.
From this point.
Right.
You know? And it's, I don't know. It's hard. The pride is really like, it sucks, dude. But, I gotta do that more.
Yeah.
I think I gotta do that more.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a deadly sin.
Yeah.
I mean, you won't go anywhere with pride. You
know, I think that's a lot of like the plateaus I get at.
Yeah.
You know, I've plateaued so many times. I think it's just, I haven't reached out for, or like been like, I don't know anymore, you know, and this is as much as I can do.
Right.
And it's sad to admit that.
No, but I mean, it's powerful to admit it, bro. It's the thing you need to express. You need to get it out of your chest.
Or it makes me sad to admit that.
I get it.
It's not sad.
I get it. No, it's a tough thing to express, but it is, I think, essential to grow.
Yeah.
You need 100%. You need to be honest about that. And I think kudos to you, man.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that.
A testament to that, bro.
I love it because I see what you do, and it's like, you could tell when someone knows what to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, you got.
Adam knows immediately.
Right.
I looked, I'm like, he knows what he's doing.
Right.
You know?
And then I just saw, he's saying like, with the right, I need help here. And now he's receiving it and changing.
And just getting better.
We're getting more of the unique one of one person that was put here to like express his voice now and to say something. That's when you can move people. That's when you can do what Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind did for you in the bunk, in the top bunk.
That's true.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
So now we have a clearer way of getting that voice out. And it's just like, dude, that's what excites me.
Yeah.
That's what excites me.
Like, and shout out to that person that said that they didn't see that thing in you in your movie. Because I think that's a good thing.
So,
some of the, dude, I would say that outright.
Stunned to hear that, and I love that.
I'd be pissed.
Yeah, I'd be like, hey,
but I'd be like,
of course, yeah.
That would push me.
Yeah,
it was an old boss.
Wow,
it was an old boss. There you go, man.
Wow.
I sent him the movie, and he was like, "Yeah, this is great. Just I don't see you in it." And I'm like, "Huh?"
Because it's not like an insult or a compliment. It's just like what do I even feel from
right,
you know?
Yeah, there's never going to be another Adam Paul Stone after this or before or whatever.
What did that make you want to do that comment?
Yeah, man. What happened?
I just ignored it, you know, at that time. Just like, was he not? I think it was similar to like what Katie, Adam's wife, said too. She read the first version of my feature film and she was like, yeah, I don't really know what you're trying to do with it. And it was brutal.
Yeah,
I invited Adam and Katie to an Airbnb for a weekend, and I thought, I mean, funny enough at this point, but I was like, I packed up my camera. I'm like, we're probably going to shoot some test footage. And the whole weekend ended up turning into like this brutal thing where it was like, what is your movie about? And I was just like, wait, what are we doing? You know, it was just like this totally different perspective on what I thought this weekend was going to be. Because, like, as my wife always tells me, you have a lot of yes men around you for years. You've just had people that I would send a script to and they say, looks good, or can't wait to work on it. It wasn't like challenging me. Yeah. When I met Adam and Katie, that's what a lot of it was like, we want you to do your best. So we're going to challenge this thing. And it was literally like an ambush feeling. I remember my face got red during it, like embarrassment. And also like, and I think it was just so hard to like go through that, but it was so necessary to go. It was like a part of the process of like, what? I thought I knew what I was doing or whatever. I don't know. It's just all that pride stuff. Like I talked about, it was a really brutal weekend for me. But it was the beginning stages of like sort of healing this part of me that, and yeah, it was crazy. So she also said it too. She was like, I don't really see you in it. Like, I don't know what you're going for. And I don't know. So I think it was a lot of tough love, to get me from, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I'm so thankful for meeting Adam and stuff. I think it was just so beneficial to my artistic stuff. I think I would have just been writing the same, you know, living for the glory days or whatever. You know what I mean? Like this thing that's like, who cares? But like, I truly just want to be good. Like, I know I can't ever be great or perfect. But I just want to move people. And to do that, you have to write from the best part. And like, I wasn't doing that. I was writing for something else. I was going for like, well, what's the easiest way to achieve it? Or, you know, just these other things that I wasn't actually truly being the best version of me. Right. And through them, I found that. Crazy. Dang. Or the process of finding it. I think it's still happening.
Yeah, of course. But it's going to keep happening. It's never like you got a hold on this thing. You never have just a hold.
Yeah,
on it, you know, it's never going to be like, yeah, I've arrived. Here I am,
the
great artist, you know, like, exactly. I swear, man, it just never exists. But in moments you get like, when you work a certain way where you can, I remember being on set, dude, and being like on Wayward and being like, wow, like I'm not pushing for anything. Like I'm not, I have zero concern about how this is being received. I don't even know how I look or sound or what's happened. Like, I was so present. All the work had been done. I threw it out the window when I got there and worked in the way I always said I wanted to work. And when, you know, Adam directed me, he was like the gift of all gifts. He's my best friend at the time. Like, you know, you and him are my best buddies. Like, but he's there every day on set. Like, and we're driving home in like a rented van, like, and I'm just looking, I'm like, I don't know what's going on. And he's like, trust me, we're good. I'm like, good. It was like the coolest shit just to be like, wow, all that work. And like that kind of, with that kind of intent of like, let's do it this way. Let's try it this way. Let's give everything we have to this thing. And then like, you get a moment of like, this is incredible. Like, this is incredible. And then afterward, it's like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I have to, the next story comes with the next list of challenges and the next whatever that I have to go work on. And, you know, that's always like when I'm like, I'm an imposter. I don't know what I'm doing. And then I have to go figure out a way to like understand my doings and fill it with me and open up. And now I have a way of doing that. And I'm going to learn something from someone else in the journey of it. And it's always unfolding. It's like jazz. It's just, it's happening as we go. You can't prepare for anything there, you know? Man, some of the best moments of that thing were like, me and Adam, like, that's my boy. I can't say that enough. And we're just like filling up a tire. And like, I'll tell you a story. We went to pick up the truck that we use in the film, the shooting truck, my character's truck. We had to drive to Oklahoma to get it. So we drive to Oklahoma, right? And this is like a day before we're shooting, right? And we're under the gun. We have no money. We're hoping everyone shows up. Like, it's just, we're sweating, but we're putting all of our faith, which is the first time we've ever invited faith into what we do, in him, and just trusting that, you know, it's going to work. And if it doesn't, that's okay. We're not dying to story. It's not like if this doesn't happen, I'm dead, right? I have a great life. And I'm blessed. But you know, taking that off the pedestal, and then just, I just want to be a part of this. And if it's for me, I will be. Now, fast forward, we're picking up this truck. We're driving it back. Oh, this is a little later. We had the work van. We had the, with all the stuff, and we're driving it from set home, and the tire was leaking. We're like, dude, this is like day two, and we got a tire leak. Like, what are we gonna do? Pull into the the gas station here. So we pull in. The air compressor thing, like Adam goes in to like get the change for the compressor, and I'm trying to like see where the hole's coming in. He comes out and he's like, and I found change and I'm filling up the compressor with the tire. So I didn't even, you know, he was going to get the change. We didn't even need it. I'm filling it up and he comes out and he's like, "What the hell's going on?" I'm like, "What?" And he's like, "The lady said that it's broken. It's been broken for months." And I'm like, "It's filling up right now. Like, I look, it's like, see, like it's working." And it worked. And we're just laughing our asses off. Like, isn't this crazy? Isn't this insane?
Wow.
We pulled up. We pulled up to the rental house, and we were picking up the truck for the first time. Now, you know, 5 years ago, me and Adam are just like, we're just acting in scenes and in plays in different classes. And like now I remember we were driving the van out of the rental house. First time we ever had the van, full of equipment in the back. Adam's driving it. And I look to my left and he's this look on his face of like, here we go, I guess. And I'm like, he says, we're independent as fuck right now, dude. And I'm like, dude, we really are. Like, this is really just like the craziest life ever. And it was moments like that where I was like, dude, oh my God, if we try to do this the way we used to do it, where it was, oh, we gotta kill it. This has gotta be our greatest shit. And we gotta, if we don't do this, like, it's gotta make this amount of money, and we have to have this kind of investors and then these kind of stars, and then it's gotta go here and here and here and here. And we gotta be the center of this, like, we would have just never, there would never have been these moments. You know, we'd be too stressed, too much pressure. Yeah. There'd be no joy in the process and the story would suffer. And in the midst, that's what I remember most. I don't even remember the acting. Like, the acting was like the thing I did, but like, I lived those moments with my brother, you know, like, he's my brother. He's my brother, dude. That guy, we're like this for life because of like, we sacrificed so much. We changed each other's like perspectives on things. And like, he gave me more than just a movie. Like, he gave me faith. Adam opened me up to faith again. Adam opened me up to like belief, you know, and you know, doing it for the other person and doing it for good, you know, doing it, not because you have to do it, but because if you're blessed with the opportunity to do it, you show up. And, dude, I just, the miracles that happened, I'll talk about for the rest of my life. If it's the last one, like, it was the greatest gift of all time. And I don't need to prove myself to anyone anymore. The insecurities are gone. You know, like, I'm not looking for, you can tell me anything. You'd say it sucks. You could say, you know, my acting's garbage. And like, I could look you in the face and be like, that's okay. Like, it's okay. It really is okay. I don't need this to live and breathe anymore. I could do this. If I'm presented opportunities to do it, if God says that's what I want you to do, Dave, I'll do it. And if it's not, I'm genuinely good. I've been loved enough. Like, I'm loved enough. I've received enough. And, but of course, do I want to? I'm ranting, but like, this is the mind of a lunatic who now can say like, I'm an artist, dude. You know, I'm not an egomaniacal, like, I need love. I need attention. I need to tell stories to be received by people, and like, I won't be satiated ever. I'm satiated, but I am excited. Like I meet you, dude. And it's like, bro, this guy has a story, and it's one that he wants to tell because it means something to him as a human. He has something to say about it. Okay. And there's no yes men around you saying like, yeah, just do whatever you want to do. It's like, we're going to challenge each other and try to make it a story that can move the top bunk kid, you know? That's the point. That's the point.
Mm. Production company name.
Yeah, hey.
Top bunk kid.
Top bunk kid. Top bunk kid LLC, dude. Don't take it. We said it first. Date it.
LLC. I'll get you a kickback on that.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate it. All that to say, dude, I just... I don't know. I just, we both love Adam. We've been talking about him a lot. Adam, I love you, dude. Yeah, he's great. But he also, I'm excited to now get your voice out there in the most specific and personal way and honed in as we could possibly do it. I'm just psyched, dude. I'm psyched. You know, another thing was like the power of the no. How many times have you ever jumped on something and you were like, you know what? I'll just do it. These are my friends. This is whatever. I'll just do it. Just to get something on the books. You know, just to...
Yeah.
And then, I mean, for me, on the other side of it, I'm always like found wanting. You know, I'm always like, dude, the power of the no. I was always a yes man because I just wanted I just wanted everyone to love me. So it was always like, whatever you need, I'll be there. Yeah, this and that. And knowing full well, I can't contribute. I'm empty. I don't have enough for you on this thing. I don't even know what's going on.
Yeah.
I just need something on the books. Mm-hmm. Or I just want to help you out and be my friend, you know, and I'm hurting them. Mm-hmm. The power of honesty, dude. There's real love is honest love. And yeah, you need sometimes a boss saying like, I don't see you in these stories that you're telling. You know, that's some love, dude. That's love. My wife told me the same thing. She's like, you suck at this. Well, I was like 21. She was like, at the time we were just dating. And I was like, what? I'm amazing. Like, what? My teacher said I was great. You know, I know exactly. I'm special. I am special. We're all special. But like, dude, I needed to hear that. Dude, she like literally diverted where I was going in my life and put me on a different path. And I would not be able to do what happened on our last thing without her. Yeah. I would have stayed the course, not hurt anyone at all, said, I know what I'm doing, trust me, and sucked. And right. Now no one's getting anything except my own ego and pride, which is bottomless, which I can just eat till I die. I'm going to shut up now because your boy just rambles. Your boy just talks.
Like a day ramble.
When his heart's going, when the blood pressure hits like, you know, a higher rate, your boy just opens his mouth. So I'm going to shut up now, bro. I'm going to put it back on you. I'm going to put it back on you, Adam, I swear. What's one thing that you've noticed that's changed about you from before you were a father to now?
Oh, man. Great question. Before, I think I'm more cautious or even more thoughtful about just everyday existence. Like when I hop in the car, I think your existence could change. Like you, like getting in a car wreck could change a lot of things. But I think even more so somebody who, like her life could be changed forever just by getting in the car. If I got in the car and something was to happen, everything. And those thoughts are constantly, and it's not great, but those thoughts do constantly go through my head. Like I go on these pretty dangerous video shoots sometimes where people have guns and stuff and like think like, wow, what if this is it for me? Like what will she remember about me? Or like, what will they tell her what kind of person I was? Or so those are the thoughts that go through my head a lot, and they're not great to think about. But those are things that definitely have changed, is thinking about the impact that you have on the world and her, and what will she remember? And so I'm constantly trying to be the best person I can just for her. And it's tough, you know, because sometimes sometimes don't have great days. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like sometimes days are rough, and you just always have to be thinking about her and how what's her life going to be like if I have a bad day. You know what I mean? It's it's tough.
I know you said it hurts to think about these things, and I'm going to be a bad friend, and I'm going to just ask to think a little bit more about these things, because I think this is important, dude. I think this is important. You're saying like, how would she remember me? Like, what are some things you hope how she would remember you? Like, what is something you'd hope she would think about you and remember?
I hope that she remembers that I fostered the creativity in her, and that I was fun. I think that's one thing that I can provide. My wife does so many great things that I'm like, yeah, I can't do all those things. But one thing I can do is to be fun. And there's a lot of, it's just, I don't know. I just think that's one thing I can't provide is the funness value. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can access this part of her that is like, I can pretend with her and play games and do those things and like access that part. And I hope that she would remember that, that's what our relationship was this. I mean, we are literally like creating a movie right now on my PS4. It's like a dinosaur movie. Oh, so it's like that she couldn't have got that from anybody else. Like, so it's fun. And like, hey, speaking of which, Dave, do you want to do a voice in this dinosaur movie?
I was dying for you to ask.
You'd have a good dinosaur.
Oh, I'm so psyched for that. Please. Yes.
It's kind of a play on The Lion King. It's called Dino Spirit. And it's about this dinosaur who comes into the world, you know, comes out of an egg, and it's sort of just a rip off of The Lion King, but The Lion King's her favorite movie. So it's but she loves dinosaurs too. So anyways, so I'm going to get you to play a raptor in it if you're down.
And, favorite dinosaur. Favorite dinosaur.
Is it really?
What's Adam going to be though? Hold on. What's Adam going to be?
He's also going to be a raptor. So you're going to be like a trio of raptors. So
the brother raptor.
So am I the bigger, greener raptor?
We'll go for one that's like a little fat slower.
No, don't take it away. Did he just say the fat raptor?
I'm joking, man. I knew I shouldn't have said that.
Son of a gun, man.
I just wanted to be funny. I'm sorry.
Like, how dare you?
It's just hard to
get. You're the buff gun.
You know,
you're
this the buff part, one. You know the part just above the. It's hard to get that off you. That's all I'll say. Okay?
Yeah.
I'm a big guy.
It sure is.
Anyway, dude. How important is the preservation of fun, man? How important is preserving fun in life? You know, it's easy to get stuck in the mundane. We get caught up in the bills and having to do the things to survive, right? But how important is creativity? How important is enjoyment? You know, finding joy in your day. And my man here is being a great father by trying to preserve that. So,
yeah.
Adam, can you speak on that? Like, what does that mean to you, this stuff?
It is something I have actually thought about because I think in the roles of a marriage, you could have somebody who's more teaching about spelling, which I wouldn't be great at, and learning and all these other abilities. But I was always like, I think I am the yin to the yang to this because I'm can do this other aspect of her life, which is having the creating the thing that's like, I'm going to foster your creativity and hope that it, you know, continues through your whole life. So I have actually had these deep thoughts about like, I think one person in this relationship can do all those things that I can't do, which is all the things my wife does so well, but I can provide another thing, which is fun, which like you were saying, like it is so necessary to have fun. I think, we can get so stuck into just the mundane, like you're saying, but, I can be there and just be silly. In probably not the best times too. I can't be that way. You know, it's like, when can I stop it? You know, it's like, my wife's like, hey, it's bedtime. She needs to calm down. I'm still trying to like, you know, tackle her onto the bed or whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I need to chill out. So, but, I think it's so good. I feel like growing up, you know, to get down in there, like we didn't have that, you know, it was like a lot of the times my parents weren't really, like when we had dinner, they were in the living room watching, you know, Monday Night Football or whatever. And I never even really got to see, God, I hope my dad doesn't watch this. Never really got to spend time with him. And those small occasions that he would try to interact with me or my brother and stuff, it was not, if we weren't being disciplined, it wasn't not in. And if it was fun related, it was like, I wanted to hold on to it forever. Mm-hmm. And I even still find myself doing that too. Like he'll call me on the phone and those conversations will be like 3 hours. And I'll just, my wife's like, why were you on the phone for 3 hours? I think it's like me just trying to hold on to something. It's like, oh, he wants me. You know what I mean? Like he wants to reach out to me. So I'm trying to hold on to it. Oh. It's like 3 hour phone call about what? I'm like, I don't know. He talked about himself for 3 hours. Mm-hmm. He didn't even ask how I was. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so strange. I think the parent needs to do these things because if they don't, they become adults who have these weird issues. Mm. When like, it doesn't matter what you do. Matt got a phone. I'm having the phone now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, man. You just hit some wild, like, I'm sure there's a lot of people listening right now that feel this too, bro. I don't want my dad to hear this either, but if he does, he'll hear it. I was talking to my therapist one day and she said, Dave, you know, we talk about your dad a lot. And I just sense that you just have this deep love for the man, right? Like, regardless of what's happened in the recent years or whatever, you know, and in the past, like, you just love this human and you struggle with that. Yes, true. So I'm going to just say a word and you tell me if this, like, you relate to this at all and if this makes any sense or no. She said, would you say at all, in any sense, has his love been elusive? And I was like, no. Like, no way. Not absolutely not. Like, he's there. He's been there my whole life. Even after, you know, the split up, you know, he picked me up on the weekends, every other weekend, you know. Like, he would always kiss me on the cheek. And the dude was, you know, he's telling me he loved me. Like, I don't think it was elusive. And then, like, you sit on that for, like, a couple, you know, hour or even 5 minutes. You sit on that. And you're like, and by the end of the 5 minutes, I'm, like, bawling. I'm like, what the hell just happened? You know, this elusive thing. Like, how did one word just change my whole perspective on, it was like opening a door that I had, like, shut, barred up, you know, driven wood and nails into, and like with one word in 5 minutes, like it totally like broke open, and it made a lot of sense. Because I felt like the same way for a lot of years, like where I'd be, anything I need, like he need, I'm here, I'm there, I'm there, I'm there, I'm there, I'm there. You know, what do you need? I'm there, I'm there. And I was like, why am I crazy? Why am I an insane person with my father? And I think it was that. It was like, I'm gonna get love from this guy. Like I'm gonna get the relationship I want from him. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, I have to play this part and I have to be what he needs me to be at all times. And then I'll get I'm proud of you, son. And like that's all I want. Like you're a good man. You've grown into a good man and I love you. And the funny thing is, like when I stopped doing that stuff after this realization, like now I receive it. You know, now it's like this new thing where it's like I know this guy better than I ever have my whole life because I could finally see him and I could see me and I'm aware like I'm not this wild love seeking from my dad who I'll always love no matter what he does or says, like, you know, codependent kid. Oh, I'm not that little kid anymore. That kid needs to be like told it's okay. You're loved and you need to feel that truly. It's a whole process, I believe, especially when you got a lot of issues. But once you get there, it's like, oh, I could see this dude and I could humanize this guy. And like, I don't need to be at his beck and call. I don't need to play a role for him to survive, like for him to love me. Like he loves me too. He loves me too. Even when he thinks I'm wrong, like he still loves me. And changed our whole relationship, you know? And it gave me a lot of peace and a lot of just serenity time with my dad, which I never thought I'd have. Never thought. Mm. So it's been a wild ride, but it's so cool. Like, and I never saw it coming. When I stopped looking for the thing I was chasing for years and years and years and like, you know, give myself some love time for myself. Now I can love my dad. And he can love me.
Hmm. Nice.
Yeah, bro. I don't know. I'm not preaching. I'm just talking about my experience.
Yeah, man.
I relate. I'm just trying to say I relate. Hmm.
There's something about, like, I don't know. I always think about, even with Adam and doing the movie thing, like dinosaur movie with his kid, you know? It's like, I feel like that keeps you, like, I always think about, man, like when I first started getting to like making, you know, videos and movies at home, I was like, dude, that's the childlike essence of like creativity that I was like, so it was the best time. You know what I mean? It made me forget about everything, life and just making these things. And I think it's funny, like as an adult now, I'm like, I need that, like that childlike creativity, you know, yes. I got to get back into that, like channel that. But like, I feel like maybe that sometimes you, when you think back as an adult, you channel and then like you think about, you know, that stuff with like that, the traumas and like all these things, it's like such like a mixed up thing. Like you can't go back, you know what I mean? And it wasn't perfect. And like, you have to channel it somehow in like a healthy way.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It is.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a strange thing.
Yeah. It's strange to open up the past.
It's good I think it's good to explore though.
Totally.
You know?
I think it's essential.
Like, I think it's, if you want to make some good, like, personal stuff.
Yeah.
I think it could really help.
Yeah, bro.
You know?
Yeah.
How personal do you get, Adam, with your stuff? Is it something sounds... you very personal? You pick two words and you make a script,
like a samurai.
Yeah,
coffee. You know, and then like you just blend.
I think for me it always stems from personal. I just execution of that had always been a challenge of like doing that, but. I think like for like this movie, it's called Just Like a Butterfly. It like started as a horror movie. That was the original script.
Really?
And then I wrote that when I was 18 and just put it on a shelf and came back to it after I found out my wife was pregnant. And I was like trying to, well, what's my next movie going to be? And I was trying to figure out what that was. And, I thought about that script I'd written when I was 18 about that, and I don't even know. It was like a 6-hour drive from Lubbock, Texas to back to the Dallas area. And I was thinking about it, trying to unravel this idea. And I was like, do I want to do a horror thing? And it's not really on my heart to do stuff like that. And as I started digging into it, it became a story about a husband and a wife and the fear of what if you lost their memory. And that really intrigued me. And through that whole 6-hour trip, I came up with the story of what it became, and it has like an element of being a father in there. And I wasn't even a father at that point, but it was always just there because, you know, she was pregnant. So I was thinking about it a lot. And once we shot the movie, which was a little bit after COVID, God was just so, it felt so real. And it felt like the most connected I had been to something I'd made where I don't like when it comes on, I don't have to turn away, or when I'm at a film festival and it plays, I don't have to leave the room because I was so embarrassed. You know what I mean? Like being at these things where you're like, oh, I can't even be in the room. I could actually sit there and watch it with people because I felt like it was doing the thing that I wanted, which was move people. I think a lot of that was connecting some truth to the story, was actually blending me into it, which was what that boss had said years ago. It was like, I don't see you in it. I was actually able to like blend those two things, and people were coming up to me at screenings and actually wanting to have conversations where before then people would try to run out of the room, I'm sure, like, what did you think, as they're running away to their car or whatever. Like, you know, so it was actually like something where I felt like I connected something. So it was, I felt like, this was like sort of a beginning of investigating that. I just didn't know what that was. I didn't know what that meant. I thought it was just luck. You know,
yeah,
got lucky with that one.
Yeah,
you know,
dude, just rolling the dice every time. Like, hope this one moves somebody. Yeah, man, I relate to that too. That's such an honest thing, bro. And I think not a lot of people understand. But when you do it, it's like there's so much anxiety that goes into showing your thing in a film festival, and then when it's doubly anxious, when it's something you don't even like. You know, when it's like, right. Damn, I can't believe, why did they take this? Like, shit, I got to sit through this? Like,
it must be crazy for an actor.
Oh,
you're an actor.
God.
So you have to go to these things where you're invited. You probably haven't seen it yet. And so you go to it and you have to sit there and watch it. Like, oh, my
God. Dude, It's a whole thing. There was, like, times where I was sitting in there and I was just like, I can't miss this. This isn't for me anymore, man. You know? But then like with like Rose Garden and the other thing, like with I'll Meet You There, I was like, oh man, I feel good here. Like, yeah, I feel good here. There's things I want to change about them both, but like there's I love them. I love them. And I'm glad I was a part of them. Adam, what is like, you know how like people say something to you, kind of like what your boss said, and it's like that wasn't quite advice. It was just like an observation, right? And it was an honest observation and it changed your life. What's a piece of advice maybe you've been given or something that someone told you about life that stuck with you, dude? That's something you carry.
Golly, such a big question. I don't think anyone has said anything so profound where it like stuck with me. It's more about behavior stuff, just seeing people behavior, being kind to others, I think is really, so my great grandmother, I was very close with her name. I called her Momo. She was just this very, she just loved people and like loved her grandkids and us, her great grandkids. And just, and I think about her every day, think about the kind of person she was and the human she was. And, I just, it's weird that I just want to make her proud. You know, it's like, how? Like, I don't know. Like looking down, hopefully she is type thing. But she was just a good soul. And I think that's what I got from life. It's just like, just be good to people, you know, and how do you do that? And I think it's just chasing kindness. And I don't know. She also, I think, was really honest with people and people. I think there were people that did not like that, this like raw honesty from this old lady. So I think that is something I wish I had a great skill set at. It was like being brutally honest. I don't know about brutally honest, because I think that could be taken wrong. I think just being honest when you need to, because I think there's so often the times that people will like, let's just say, for instance, someone comes to you with like a movie, like, what did you think? And I'm just, I think if I was to be actually helpful and a good friend, I would be honest. But in those situations, I'm usually just like, looks good. You know what I mean? Looks good. But I think my grandmother would have been honest. Yeah. And have been like, yeah, that's horrible or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. That's somebody I really think about a lot and like who she was. And that's just such an important figure in my life. And I don't know. Just can't wait to tell a story about her one day. I think she ended up in one of my scripts and we've like shot a movie in her house at one point too. So I've done everything I can to infect her into everything I do. Because it's so strange. I think about this a lot too. It's like, she was a great grandmother. I saw her, you know, every opportunity I got, even as an adult, trying to make my way down there to spend time with her. And I think the reason is because she gave us and myself the freedom to be kids. If this, you know what I mean, like a lot of times kids have to act like adults in situations or whatever, like we just have the freedom just to play. You're either getting in trouble for being a kid, like for instance, like one time kicked a sprinkler and it like sprayed everywhere, and my first thought was like, I'm dead. I'm going to be, so instead of being like, you're a kid, you're going to kick a sprinkler, which that's how my grandmother would have treated the situation, but like say for my father or my mother, that it would have been like, I did everything to like get the water from not spraying into the sky. You know what I mean? Like putting buckets over it or whatever, because I was so afraid of getting in trouble.
Wow.
So I don't know. It's just like, she just was okay with you being a kid. And why is that? That's normal, I think. So I think being around her, I felt free to be myself or be a kid. Like I wasn't thinking about being myself. I was just thinking about being young, just having the freedom to be that.
Yeah.
So yeah, she's just so important to me.
Man.
It's amazing, man.
Shout out to her.
The same grandma, dude. I had the same exact experience.
Yeah.
My great grandma, man.
That is you.
Yeah. Same thing, man.
You said it well, man. Just let you be a kid.
Yeah.
And when you're a kid, you're not thinking about, who am I? You're just like, I'm going to go kick that sprinkler right now. Yeah. Like, that's all you're thinking. You're just not thinking. You're not thinking about existential things like that.
My grandma told me, she's Polish, śmiech jest zdrowie, which means like laughing is like health, you know?
Mm.
So it's like, I don't know, dude. That stuck with me for the rest of my life.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I think the being kind, Teddy, relax, bro. The being kind thing stuck with me because my mom loves people. My mom is obsessed with people. She's like, she just loves studying people, which I think I relate to her with this. And she's always kind at every opportunity. Like I remember specifically, we would go to the diner. She liked going to the diner and we would get, you know, like a waitress or a waiter or whatever. And my mom would spend more than half the time like talking to the waiter or the waitress, you know, like, she would learn their names, where they go to school, what they want to do with their lives. Like,
oh, wow.
To the point where I'd be like falling asleep in the booth, you know, like I'm just tired. but she would like, she gave time willingly to people all the time. And I think like that genuine sense of like interest in other people and giving them a time to like share with another person. Like she gave them space all the time. Like my mom just loves people, dude. Yeah. And that kind of kindness, like that's such a value like that can be easily lost, you know, when you're after something, when you have goals and when you want to just accomplish things, to like forget that there's people even around you. Yeah. And I think that that kind of lesson, you know, through behavior, through seeing it happen, not being told, be nice, but like seeing it actually happen. Like a kid learns from watching what you do. They're always watching, right? And they're going to pick up on those things and they're going to take them into their adulthood. And yeah, we just watch her be kind to everybody, dude. She, homeless dude would show up at her she was a hairstylist. She had a little salon. And she would, like a homeless guy with his dog, he would just show up to her shop every day. Like, right? He would stop at the 7-Eleven and come over to the shop. And we knew his name. We played with the dog, Sparky. It wasn't about the, you know, other people, shop owners probably be like, get out of here. My mom would like cut his hair and like, she would take me to the nursing home to like cut the nails of the elderly and like, you know, massage their hands and like hear their stories and stuff. Mm. And dude, like I'm who I am because my mom is who she is, the way she behaved with people. Mm. And yes, I'm realizing now what, thank God my mother like instilled that in me, dude. I like that about, wow. Hey, I like that about myself. That's a new thing.
Let's go, man.
I don't really say that
much,
huh?
Let's freaking go.
I like that about myself.
Let's go, Teddy.
Thanks, Mom.
Let's go, dude.
Man. Very cool.
Very cool. Hey, dude.
That's awesome.
You were here podcast.
You were here podcast, we're baby. Are we at the end of the
that
show?
Was way over an hour.
Is it?
Well, yeah.
Wow. Okay, Adam. I don't want you to just go.
I know. We gotta have him say something.
Well, I just want to see. Is Teddy, relax, brother. Is there anything that he's trying to lick the microphone out? Is there anything that you would like to give to me and Mike or anyone who may be listening right now?
Is it a financial contribution?
No. Not gift in a sense of
Patreon,
financial.
Tier three?
Yes, a tier three. I mean, we are accepting tier three Patreon members. No. Is there anything going on in your life right now, something that you picked up or just something that you want to leave that maybe you check on in a year or two? This is like a time capsule. You know, what is something that you would like if there was a top bunk kid right now listening to this podcast, like what would you like to tell that kid?
I would say stay a kid as long as you can, to be creative and be kind to others. I think those things that I feel like I lost through those years is like just being a kid kind of gets lost on us. We just want to be an adult so fast. So I would say just if there's a top bunk kid out there, just have that, or even if you're an adult, have that childlike spirit about you for forever, and be a kid as often as you can. I know it's not viable all the time, but I think it's something that we all need to strive to do, finding that childlike spirit and creativity, and also being kind to anyone we encounter, no matter the situation. I think kindness is definitely needed in this world more than ever, maybe not ever before, but definitely always needed. And it's something that I strive to do every day, is just be kind to others. And I think it does affect people because I hear it all the time. Like I go to, you know, weddings or video shoots or whatever like that, and you hear from other photographers or whatever, like, wow, you're just so kind or whatever. I'm like, what, do you encounter the opposite? Like, yeah, I've been to weddings and these videographers are horrible, or like shooting music videos and people are like, the last director was so rude to everybody. I'm like, why can't we just be kind to people? Like, yeah. Why is that so hard? Like, so I think if we just chase that dragon more than anything else, I think we'll have a nicer world, a kinder world.
Yeah. Hey, I like you, dude. I like you a lot. And I'm glad we met, man. I get it now. I'm starting to understand. I'm starting to really like, I swear, man. I'm speaking from the heart, man. I'm glad we met.
It's the beginning.
Yeah. No, this makes a lot of sense to me. We're going to bring kindness back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Adam Paul Stone. Is there anything you want to leave me and Mike with? Anything you got to wake us up to, bro? What are we doing wrong?
I think you guys could work on like doing more episodes. Like, you guys have only have like, what, 200 and something, right?
264.
Or was it 500?
264. 5 years running.
Y'all been doing since 2018, I think. Somewhere right? There,
it's been a while. It's been a while.
Dude, think about it. 500 episodes. How old are we going to be?
We're going to be old, man. Double this. Oh, my God.
I think y'all could probably do some more. I think you can do like 2 or 3 a week.
Really, we should do a Guinness World Record for the longest running podcast. We should do it.
No, we would never win. No, I mean, so it's too late. We're too late.
No.
Yeah, there's like a 16-year-old that already, or 5-year-old.
No, we got started.
Right. I think Bill Burr's got like.
Yeah, exactly. Bill like, Burr's
he'll
got
stop.
15 years. Yeah, that year old. We'll see, bro. That's shooting high. But hey, good idea.
Thanks. Thank you guys so much for listening to the You Are Here podcast, episode 264.
Look at your shoulders,
Stone,
dude. Hold on.
Guy.
I just got to give you props.
Dude.
No, because you're getting swelled
thanks,
up, and I got to give
thanks
you props.
A lot. Shout out to the patrons, patreon.com/YouAreHerePodcast for supporting us. It's the best way to support us, and we got behind-the-scenes footage of our live interviews.
Yes.
We talk a lot of crazy stuff on there.
Crazy.
So if you want to get on there, you can really.
We had an Albanian man that we were trying to direct in the right direction. We still don't know what he was talking about.
He didn't
about.
Speak English.
It was like 45 minutes.
It was awesome.
Trying to help him out.
But
I still don't know what block means.
Block.
Block.
I don't know. But hey, that's it.
That's it, bro. End of the pod.
My name's Mike. I'm signing out.
My name's Dave. I love y'all. Please be kind to yourself. Please be kind to one another. Adam.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Yeah. Goodbye.
Now I gotta really do it. Dave, you have to. Don't look behind me.
We're good. Yes!
I don't want to look at this anymore.
Thank you.